The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. As we head into hour two, it is a delight to bring back to the show our good friend Congressman John Shattuck. Congressman Shattuck represented Arizona's old 4th Congressional District for many years. He is the principal of Shattuck Associates, LLC, and has become just, you know, a great voice of common sense and common reason. We usually have him on Wednesdays, and we couldn't do it this week due to me being a little bit febrile. We're all better now, and he's on the road, but wanted to check in, and I wanted to catch up with him. John, welcome back to the show, and I hope your travels are going well.
They're great, and I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yeah, thank you. I just had one of those day things that just gets to you. I know you're on the way, if I don't blow your cover, on the way to California. And I'm just wondering if you stopped through Gila Bend on the way, my old favorite place, that Space Age Lodge. I love that old Space Age Lodge there. I didn't know if you may have stopped there for a cup of coffee.
I love the Space Age Lodge. I love the Space Age Lodge, but I didn't stop there today.
The guy who founded it, believe it or not, just to show you how big a country or state this is, the guy who founded it also founded one of the nicer hotels on Camelback Road in Phoenix, kind of an upscale place where the T. Cook's restaurant is and Royal Palms. And I just thought, you know, that's America. You
really?
Got this. Yeah,
I
same guy.
No idea.
Yeah, same guy. Yeah. Same guy. It's a big country, isn't it?
I am completely shocked.
I love it when I can teach you about Arizona lore. I love it. Doesn't happen often.
The Palms is a beautiful place, and no one would guess. I mean, presidents have stayed there, and no one would guess there was a connection.
I know. You're going to California. Are you going to study what doesn't work? Is this a fact-finding mission?
It is. I'm going there on a fact-finding mission to find out what it means to the economy when you completely divorce the cost of a service from the value of the service, and you decide, well, we're going to pay every worker at a fast food restaurant a minimum of $20 an hour.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see how many jobs have been replaced by machines or some kind of technology in just this short period since it was implemented.
I don't know why people think this is far off. I mean, we're already doing it with cars, right? We have like Waymo where you have driverless car. If you can have a driverless car, you can have an inhuman, a robotic burger made and handed to you easily. It's that close. And they keep making life expensive in America to do business, which means they keep making it expensive to hire people to do business, which means they keep making it expensive to have employment in this country. And I really do worry about that, John. I really worry about people not understanding the marriage between what you said has been a divorce. Yes? Do we have you? Did I lose you for a second there, John? I may have lost you. Did I lose you? I have you there.
Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. Yeah. So
what I was saying was they do it, and it hurts the bottom rung of the employment ladder.
Yeah.
Those who are just starting out or those who don't have the skills to merit a higher level of compensation are the ones they punish because those are the jobs that they can make, they can accomplish with some kind of mechanical or technical replacement, and so those people wind up with no jobs.
You're one of these optimistic conservatives, and from the perch in which I sit as a radio host, John, I hear an awful lot of pessimism, and it's easy to become pessimistic about the direction of this country, whether it's about the direction of the economy or whether it's about the direction of our culture or any number of things. Are you still optimistic about the American dream? I get a lot of people saying, I don't know, we had a good run, but, you know, maybe it's in its sunset years. Are you still optimistic about it?
I am optimistic. I do think the American people confront some choices in the direction they want to go. Now, if you contrast America with Europe, for example, you'll find they've chosen comfort over opportunity or over improving their lives or their lifestyle, and they've accepted that. And so they have these long vacations and short work hours, but they are limited dramatically in how far up the tree of opportunity you can go. And I think we have to make that decision, and I hope and I believe that Americans have always been entrepreneurial, and they will continue to demand that. And I think government is an evil or negative force in that struggle, because government keeps saying, well, we'll give you more, we'll give you more, we'll give you more, and we'll demand less of you, and less and less and less. So that's tempting. And, of course, our friends on the Democrat side, that's what they want to do, because they want to buy themselves back into office. But I don't think that's what the American people believe in at bottom. I think they want to be entrepreneurs. They want, if possible, to work for themselves or to be able to climb the ladder of opportunity to the greatest degree they can or the greatest extent possible.
Is there a discount? Is there a national, cultural, political discount put now on the nature of individual liberty and freedom and can-do-it, stick-to-itiveness that's kind of dragging us down? I remember Ronald Reagan used to talk about, I think in his inaugural as governor as well as his inaugural in 1981, he used to talk about this notion where people think that government by an elite is superior to government for and by and of the people. And he always said, following that postulation, that if that's true, if no one among us is capable of governing himself, that we need to surrender our governance to an elite or to a bureaucracy. If we can't govern ourselves, why do we think we have the capacity to govern others? And I think we have slowly lost that lesson and surrendered more and more of that. And I wonder what you think about that.
Well, I absolutely agree that temptation has been placed in front of Americans so aggressively, and even foisted upon them so aggressively, that it is dragging them down and dragging the economy down. There's no question about it. It's a constant presence. But it's also a part of this ongoing war and between the right and the left. The left has believed for a long time and believed it more fervently as time has gone by, and as it has become not just the left, but then the liberals and then the woke Americans, that they are not capable, and they're being told they're not capable of making their own decisions. And a major premise of the far left and now of woke America is the American people are not smart enough to know how to run their own lives, and that they need to be cared for by the government, and that, in fact, those leftists and woke individuals who want to serve in the government know better how to run they do themselves. And it was tested, I guess, in part in education when the right fought back and said, you think you know how to do a better job of teaching my child than I do, but you don't know my child's name.
Right.
So it's an ongoing struggle. And it's a continuing belief. It's an initial premise of socialism or communism or statism, as the left wants to embrace it. And hopefully we are waking up as a society and figuring out that, in fact, government control of everything doesn't work all that well. Of course, you can look at communist societies where, for example, that Russians' 10-year planning schemes, because they had no market connection, did not serve the people better than capitalist markets. And the same is true in China. One of the things I'm fascinated about is the result of this upcoming election.
Hold that thought, John. Let me take a commercial break and let you make that connection in a second. And then I want to follow up on California versus the rest of the country, too. John Shattuck is my guest, and he and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Congressman John Shattuck, head of Shattuck Associates, LLC, president and founder, is my guest. Former congressman representing Arizona's 4th Congressional District, former chair of the Republican Study Committee, part of the class of 1994. John, you were about to make a point before the commercial break. You were about to make a point about where we are and how it's looking to you as we're heading into a presidential election. Feel free, sir.
I've always had my doubts about polling. The polling experts can influence the results so dramatically, and you don't get to see the questions, except in very rare circumstances.
Right.
And my dad, who ran, as you know, Senator Goldwater's campaigns and campaigns for Jack Williams and Paul Fannin and Paul Laxalt and Steve Sims and Margaret J. Smith, he had a rule about polls, and his rule was that no one poll meant anything. It was only the trend, two polls, and what was important was your candidate moving up or moving down. I am stunned, I have to admit it, that the margin between Donald Trump and Joe Biden isn't significantly wider than the polls would have you believe.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there, people are saying it's 5 to 6 points or less. And I think that I cannot believe that, it's hard for me to believe because of the abysmal job that Biden has done on literally everything from day one to now, whether it's the abandonment of Afghanistan and that embarrassing debacle to the press goes to him and says, well, what would you do if Ukraine were invaded? And he said, well, I wouldn't mind a little war or a small war.
Yeah, small incursion, right? Right, yeah.
A small incursion, saying to Putin, come on in, we won't do anything. And on down the line to where he thinks he can now, from America, manage the war in Israel and tell the Israelis how they should be handling that. The economy, which is not where it ought to be, and we're suffering from inflation. The fact that minorities across the nation are doing enough worse under him than they were under Trump, that they recognize it, and in significant numbers, they are not going to vote to reelect him, even though they voted for him last cycle. So I think the direction of America is signaled by elections, and we're going to learn a lot more. But right now, I'd like to see that margin even wider, and I wonder if it's because a lot of Americans are saying, I'm not going to tell them what I really believe.
I wonder, too. I wonder about that. I hope that's true. I also wonder about what's been done to the American mind through a generation and a half of what William Buckley would have called junk thought in our education system. You look about what's going on our college campuses right now, for example, or you look at the state you're heading into, California, where they keep reelecting an ideology and a political party, whether it's L.A. or parts northern, and the governor and the assembly and the Senate, on series of policies that fail. We are now paying in California six-figure salaries for people to clean up human excrement on the streets. A, that's a huge salary. B, whoever thought that we would now be treating humans like dogs and have to pay people to treat humans like dogs. There was this old 1940s book of ex-communists, The God That Failed. You may know it. And they were, of course, talking about their belief in communism and what they woke up to. And it was, you know, a promise to them everything and failed. I don't
right.
know if California, in so many respects, you know, the dream of everyone is its own God that has failed, or if we, or Californians, or Americans writ large, know that this project has failed because they keep voting for it.
I don't think that they grasp the degree to which it has failed, because over time, the nation has done so well and so many people are being lifted. But now, of course, that has either slowed down dramatically or been set back dramatically by inflation. And I think, you know, you initially react to the immediate things right in front of you. And so until Biden took office and until he spent massively at the beginning of his term, I don't think they saw the negative. I think they just enjoyed the positive and didn't realize what they were being asked to give up. And I also think it takes time for it to sink into them that they are being compelled to give things up. When I was, I think, in college or in grade, not grade school, in college or law school, they taught us about industrial policy, which is the government, not the market, dictating what the market would produce.
Yeah.
And that philosophy, having the government decide what we should produce and the quantity of it, was being implemented in Russia, and then ultimately it began to slip its way into the United States, and then the court said no. And industrial policy, where politicians set the nation's priorities and in everything, including the private sector, and not the free market, was rejected.
Yeah.
But we're right back there. We're having the government tell us, well, there isn't really clear proof that we'd all want to move immediately to fully electric cars, as opposed to hybrids, or as opposed to some still running on fossil fuels. It's not at all clear that that is the best policy, but the government is dictating it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who want right now, fully electric cars are sitting on lots, and the hybrids are selling at a much higher volume. And of course, for many of us, we still drive gasoline cars. So government mandated policy in even the private sector, it takes time to realize that it is A, stealing your freedom, and B, not working. So I think it's going to be a process.
Let me pick up on that after the commercial break. Stealing your freedom is a great theme. Man, that would be a good title of a book for you. Let me pick up on that with you, Congressman Shattuck, when we come right back. I'm Seth Leibson. John Shattuck is my guest. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Congressman John Shattuck is my guest. John, by phone today. Usually we have him in studio. Delighted to get him by phone. Just our schedules were a little bit disparate this week. You were saying that, you know, there's this stealing of freedom, which is the natural tendency, of course, of any government and of any bureaucracy. We'd like to think as conservatives we elect people who want to restore freedom or individual rights and individual freedoms. But we do have this problem, John, of people who are happy with their freedoms being stolen. I think COVID was a huge wake-up call. The idea that we could close businesses or churches or schools without really massive protests in the streets about those sorts of things, the surrendering to the government and this elite expertise, it was a wake-up call to me about how well...
Absolutely.
Yeah, go with that thought, if you will, and what it said to you about America and what it says to you about America today.
Well, it's interesting that it first took on that broad-scale implementation in the name of public health.
Right.
And I think that was intentional. Maybe the creation of the circumstance wasn't, but the exploitation of the circumstance clearly was.
Mm-hmm.
Americans and all humans are naturally concerned about the things that they can't control themselves. One of those that's clearly identifiable is their health or their exposure to or their injury by a disease or an illness. And every leftist who could said, you can't even question this. If you want to think on your own, you are out of step and we may have to punish you.
Right.
And so they use that niche, that area where Americans, more than perhaps maybe any other, say, yep, it's important to have rules regarding public threats to health care, which might be spread and cause vast or immense damage. And it's not at all surprising to me that the initial reaction of the American people was to accept that and say, yeah. For example, when I was a kid growing up, we all were vaccinated against polio.
Right.
And I think the first round was with a needle, and then they started doing the sugar cube.
Right.
But it actually conquered polio. We were able to conquer polio. So Americans accept some degree of government direction or control. But I don't remember anybody being told, if you refuse to be vaccinated or if you refuse to have your children vaccinated back when polio was a major threat, if you refuse, we'll put you in jail. Or if you refuse, we'll kick you out of the military service. So I think it's a concern, and I think it's forcing Americans to think about what aspect of my freedom is important to me. And one of the more esoteric and hard to get your head around is freedom of speech.
Yeah.
But what about just choice?
Yeah.
In America today, in the name of environmentalism, or more precisely, so-called global warming or climate change, we're being told, nope, you can't drive a fossil fuel-powered vehicle. You can't even drive a hybrid. You have to drive an all-electric. We're being told you can't have a natural gas stove, which I think almost every chef in the country would tell you is a better way to cook meals. It gets hot quicker and achieves things that electric can't do. They're going to tell you in our part of the world where it's hot, they're going to tell us we have to go to a cooling system called the heat pump, which is dramatically less efficient than other choices. And they're going to tell you you can't heat your house if you live where you're worried about heat with natural gas. So, you know, bit by bit, they are saying that for the greater good, we're going to take choice away from you. And it's pretty clear there's no end to this if we give in to it. So I was pleased at the degree to which the American people rose up and said, wait a minute. And perhaps the greatest example is going into a church that met outside for safety and saying, no, you can't meet at a church, period, even if you all sit outside and holding chairs.
That's right.
6 feet from each other.
That's right. I want to pick up on that one. That was a huge one. Talk about First Amendment freedoms. John Shattuck and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Congressman John Shattuck is my guest. John, you were talking about the difficulties of understanding, you know, the realms and the contours of freedom of speech. Freedom of religion was not one we had much difficulty with. In fact, I don't even think the Supreme Court of the United States ever heard a freedom of religion case until the late 1940s, if I'm not mistaken. That's how long we went without it becoming controversial, a freedom of religion claim. And you were talking about during COVID, it wasn't enough to close the churches. You couldn't have gatherings outside. And you had mayors, the Phoenix mayor, for example, encouraging people to report if they saw gatherings outside around such things as Thanksgiving. It felt also very Soviet, didn't it, and impelling people to report on fellow citizens because they were gathering in an unauthorized sense. Now, John, let me ask you a tough one here on this, because I speak on this issue with some diffidence. But the churches and synagogues that went along with this, that's what astounded me. They weren't answering to the normal higher authority that we expect churches and synagogues to answer to. They were happy. They were pleased to answer to the state, which the entire First Amendment was created to stand against. It said something not about the government. It said something deeply about our culture and our institutions, didn't it?
Absolutely. Many religions or religious institutions gave in and gave in readily. And I think it was that same point.
Yeah.
Their fear over what they were told was a grave threat. But also, organized religion has its own issues across the board.
Sure.
And loves to tell people what to do and thinks that religion itself has the right to tell people what to do. And it uses fear. Unfortunately, lots of religions use fear to secure compliance out of their adherents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a temptation that presents it to them all the time. And so in this case, for the government to use that fear, well, that's just fine. That's not a problem. But again, it is encouraging that in many of those very institutions, the participants, the people who would attend the services said, no, wait a minute. You don't seem to understand. This is my individual right guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution, and the government is prohibited from interfering in my exercise of that freedom.
Yep.
And so it was not the leaders of the church, but the church members themselves who had to rise up and say no. And, of course, government loves to exercise power. And so in instances where they shouldn't have, government prevailed. It just ran over the will of the people. And that I think, is a lesson that the people of that who are around and watching at that period of time should learn from and say, look, if the government tries again to steal our basic freedoms, we better rise up, because if we don't, they'll do whatever they choose.
Is that where we are? Do you think that side won, or do you think the government side, for lack of a better phrase, won? In other words, the government said, wow, we can create a moral panic and people will do anything we tell them. Or was it, you know what, we're looking at our schools, we're looking at what we did to ourselves, we're looking at what we did to the economy, we're looking at what we did to our mental health, and to that we will say never again. What side do you think won there?
I'm not sure that you can answer that question until a similar situation arises again.
Okay.
What I do think happened was that probably for the first time in the lives of millions of people, they recognized that, wow, government can in fact take away or aggressively attempt to take away, can threaten and bludgeon Americans to give up rights. And for millions of Americans, they sat home and said, wow, I'd never thought about that. And I think the initial reaction was, well, what's wrong with those crazy people for standing up against what is obviously a good thing? But I think in the follow-on debate that has gone on, a lot of those people whose first reaction was, well, of course we should do what the government says, I think the discussion and the debate has been, wait a minute, when should we follow an edict like that by the government? And do we have the right to question it? And if we do question it, can we succeed, or can we make our position known, or are we just servants of the state?
Yeah.
That comply. And I think a lot of Americans had never even thought about that issue. I mean, they hear the word freedom, but they don't quite know what is freedom.
Oh, that's a great
until
point.
Mm-hmm. It's threatened.
Yeah.
And then when it's threatened, they go, thought about that.
Yep. No, that's right. And perhaps, you know, we're going to reach a point here with so much loss, whether it's in the education system, elementary, secondary, now what we're seeing in the universities and colleges, whether it's in the churches and synagogues, maybe after so much loss, we kind of realize something Abraham Lincoln realized in one of his last speeches at the Sanitary Fair, which is everyone calls for freedom, everyone calls for liberty, but we don't really have a good definition of it. And maybe just now is a good time to reclaim and have a great relearning and great reteaching of what liberty and freedom really is and really means.
I definitely think so.
Yeah.
I think for decades, kind of at the end of World War II and coming forward, the greatest generation had understood what they thought freedom meant and taken it for granted. And today's Americans or today's generations are saying, wow, I guess we can't take it for granted, and we have to watch and pay attention to what government wants or is trying to do to us.
If only we had listened to Ronald Reagan on that very point,
yeah.
Right, John Shattuck? Well, God bless you, sir, and thank you for all you do. I once asked you off air what I can promote for you, and you said, freedom, that's all I stand for, and you bet you do. John Shattuck, have a good, safe trip, and thanks for spending some time on a Friday afternoon with us.
Thanks for having me on, and freedom is it.
That's it. God bless you, sir. Godspeed. I'm Seth. I'll be right back. Portions of this show brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. They have an investment, a secure investment, that is in a collateralized portfolio that actually helps people, and they invest flexibility and control with you, the investor. You can turn your income on or off. You can compound it whatever you like with YRefi. There is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. Of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises. And with YRefi, there are absolutely no fees. Best of all, you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return. That's right, 10.25% fixed rate of return, not correlated to the stock market or the Fed. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com. Give them a call at 888-YREFI-24, 888-YREFI-24. Rabbi Alush isn't in with us this week just due to the Passover holiday and duties, but we're delighted to bring in Hugh Hallman in the next hour. And we'll close the week out with him. But let me close this hour out with that wonderful line of Abraham Lincoln's that I was referencing with John Shattuck from one of his last speeches at the Sanitation Fair in 1864. He said, "The world has never had a good definition of the word liberty, and the American people just now are much in want of one. We all declare for liberty, but in using the same word, we do not all mean the same thing. With some, the word liberty may mean for each man to do as he pleases with himself and the product of his labor, while with others, the same word may mean for some men to do as they please with other men and the product of other men's labor. Here are two not only different but incompatible things called by the same name, liberty. And it follows that each of the things is, by the respective parties, called by two different and incompatible names, liberty and tyranny." Now, here's where you get to see Lincoln's mind at work. He says next, "The shepherd drives the wolf from the sheep's throat, for which the sheep thanks the shepherd as his liberator, while the wolf denounces him for the same act as the destroyer of liberty, especially as the sheep was a black one." Plainly, the sheep and the wolf are not agreed upon a definition of the word liberty. And precisely the same difference prevails today among us human creatures, even in the North, and all professing to love liberty. Let's think about that. And now you can understand why people like me and hopefully the rest of you adore Abraham Lincoln so much. And maybe think about in the context of the debate that is roiling Arizona and the rest of the nation as well right now in the area and the realm of life. I'm Seth Leibson. Hugh Hallman joining us shortly. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.